The first paper is by Mayer et al., patient-reported outcomes from the SERENA-6 trial of camizestrant plus CDK4/6 inhibitor for emergent ESR1 mutations during first-line endocrine-based therapy and ahead of disease progression in patients with hormone receptor-positive, HER2-negative advanced breast cancer. ESMO 2025, abstract 486-M0. So one of my favorite studies in 2025 was SERENA-6, presented at the ASCO plenary session. And, you know, there they demonstrated a PFS advantage to screening patients receiving first-line endocrine treatment of metastatic disease for the development of ESR1 mutations and then intervening with the as-yet-unapproved oral SERD camizestrant. And we saw PFS advantage doing that at ESMO. We saw more data now, patient-reported outcomes demonstrating an advantage to switching over to the SERD over continuing endocrine treatment. I know there's been a lot of debate about this study. Any thoughts you have about whether it's, quote, ready for prime time?
So I think it was a good proof of concept study. I'm not sure it's ready for prime time because, you know, there wasn't a crossover, right? So whether we would get the same benefit at the time of radiographic evidence of progression as opposed to acting on the molecular emergence of mutation.
So I'm curious what your thoughts are about some surveying we did. We asked 20 investigators whether, quote, sort of whether they thought it was ready for prime time and 50 community-based general medical oncologists. And interestingly, along with the discussion at ASCO, most of the investigators said what you said, it's not ready for prime time, except 7 of the 20 said yes, including some pretty prominent people you probably know the names of. And interestingly, in the general medical oncologists, 2/3 of them said yes. So any thoughts about, what I kind of came away from ASCO thinking it was a settled thing, and then I saw our survey data, and I'm like, looks like there are 2 points of view on this. Any thoughts?
So I think this is one where we really are divided, right? Like, it would have been nice that the trial had crossover. In terms of the community folks, at least those that do all tumor types, they're used to doing blood assays, ctDNA assays, and making important decisions, like in colon cancer, important adjuvant decisions. And in lung cancer, you have emergence of different types of mutations in EGFR, and you change your drugs based on that, right? And there's good data in those cancers. I think in breast cancer, where we have so many more effective therapies that we can sequence, finding the sequence that gives the patients the best survival gets to be more important. But it certainly is going to be a very tricky area for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of ways to look at it. This is a question that comes up all the time in oncology. You know, do you want to change therapy based on PFS benefit? Because that's what you're seeing here is PFS benefit. And a lot of it depends on the toxicity. The more the toxicity, the less people are willing to do it. The next paper is by Bedard et al. Imlunestrant plus abemaciclib versus fulvestrant plus abemaciclib in estrogen receptor positive human epidermal growth factor receptor negative advanced breast cancer, an indirect comparison of 3 phase 3 trials, ESMO 2025, abstract 496P. So another important trial that was presented at San Antonio last year was the AMBER-3 trial, which was the first to demonstrate the value of monotherapy with the now recently approved oral SERD imlunestrant, which is really approved because of this data. But also the trial in San Antonio reported on the combination of imlunestrant and abemaciclib, and the combination had an impressive PFS of over 9 months, and it was pointed out, though, that there wasn't an abemafulvestrant control arm in EMBER-3. So this paper at the ESMO meeting tried to address that, I think, by looking at an analysis that compared the data from EMBER-3 with the combination to 2 other strategies, one for the MONARCH 2 trial, the use of Abema as a first-line therapy, and then the post-MONARCH study using Abema fulvestrant in patients with prior CDK inhibitors. Both look like comparing indirectly in this analysis that Abema imlunestrant was the one with the best outcomes. So again, any thoughts about the EMBER-3 strategy looking at particularly the combination of imlunestrant and abemaciclib?
I mean, clearly, just based on EMBER-3, the doublet of the SERD imlunestrant plus a CDK was quite robust, even though the FDA only gave a monotherapy approval to imlunestrant. But it was quite robust in terms of PFS benefit, where we're now starting to see it hit almost 10 months, even in the ITT.
Would you like to be able to use the EMBER-3 strategy? Can you envision situations where you'd like to do that? And actually, all 20 of the investigators said yes. So you tell me right now, if you could, are there situations where you'd like to give a SERD and CDK together?
Obviously, the doublet data looks much, much more robust, right? So, but the approval is only for imlunestrant single agent. So, you know, the tricky part would be whether the insurance carriers would approve to have both. You know, especially patients who've had a different CDK in the first line setting, like if they had a palbo or ribo in first line setting, and now you're moving to a second line SERD type of a setting, putting all of these trials together, the post-Monarch, the EMBER-3, and, you know, this seems like a very appealing strategy to put forward.
The next papers are Mayer et al., giredestrant, an oral selective estrogen receptor antagonist and degrader, plus everolimus in patients with ER-positive, HER2-negative advanced breast cancer, previously treated with a CDK4/6 inhibitor, primary results of the Phase 3 EV-ERA breast cancer trial, ESMO 2025, abstract LBA-16, and Lombard-Cusack et al., preoperative window of opportunity study with giredestrant or tamoxifen in premenopausal women with estrogen receptor positive, human epidermal growth factor receptor negative, and Ki-67 greater than 10% early breast cancer. The EMPRESS study, ESMO 2025, abstract 294M0.
Giredestrant is also an oral SERD, and at least in some preclinical data appears to be perhaps a little bit more robust than the other SERDs that we have available. The EVERA study was different compared to the elacestrant study that led to the elacestrant monotherapy approval. This looked at a combination. So again, patients who have had prior CDK, no prior chemo, less than 2 prior lines of endocrine therapy, almost 70% only had 1 prior line of endocrine therapy, were randomized to receive everolimus plus ET or everolimus plus giredestrant, and they were able to use the full dose of everolimus with giredestrant at 10 milligrams. And what we saw was a very nice improvement in progression-free survival of almost 4 months, which accounted for a relative 62% improvement. And as I said, now we're starting to see the PFS that is hitting nine plus months in these patients in the second line setting. The side effect profile that we see is actually consistent with side effect profile of everolimus. You know, that drug we know causes stomatitis, GI issues, has a risk for pneumonitis. And so that's pretty much what we saw. It didn't seem to, at least to me, it didn't look like the giredestrant added too much to the toxicity. Bradycardia is one of the things that we need to watch for with this drug, at least what we saw in early phase trials. But the rate was really low, under 4%, and these were all grade 1 and 2 events. The trial did encourage prophylactic use of steroid mouthwash, primarily for everolimus. So as long as you can kind of get your patient through the everolimus part of it, to me, this regimen looks very, very tolerable.
What about this window of opportunity? I love these window of opportunity studies.
So, yeah, so this EMPRESS is very interesting that it gave giredestrant without ovarian function suppression in premenopausal women, right? So it looked at the SERD without ovarian function suppression, which is, you know, something that is going to be of great clinical relevance to our patients. Ovarian function suppression is just has a lot of toxicity associated with it. And then because there was no ovarian function suppression either arm, they compared it to just tamoxifen, right? And I would say we saw equal reduction in Ki-67. I think one outstanding question here would be that there wasn't a tamoxifen plus ovarian function suppression arm. So if the ovarian function suppression was added to tamoxifen, would giredestrant still be comparable to tamoxifen? But nonetheless, a very important study, because thus far, to give our SERDs, we have been required to suppress the ovaries, right? So, which brings a lot of toxicity. So a very important study from that aspect. I'm sure there are going to be others that will carry this theme forward with other SERDs, including the other two that are available.
So I guess also it brings out the point that kind of I've sort of been wondering about, which is the value of SERDs just in and of themselves compared to standard endocrine therapy. All these trials that compared it to another control arm, you know, so they weren't better. So people sort of put those aside. ESR1, they were better.
Yeah.
But it looked like they were very similar. And you wonder, you would think they're going to be better tolerated than like even tamoxifen, but for sure AIs, whether or not in the future we maybe will use these as primary adjuvant endocrine therapy. Do you think that's a possibility either in premenopausal as in this study or even all patients?
So, yes, that's a wonderful question and very important one. And actually, trials are ongoing looking at, you know, adjuvant therapy, replacing a SERD for an aromatase inhibitor with or without a CDK. And, you know, certainly, as you said, the toxicity profile compared to AI for certain toxicities will be better. Whether it will be more efficacious or not, these trials will show us. But if the toxicity is better and they're more tolerated, more patients are likely to stay on it. We know very well that the compliance with 5 years of AI and endocrine therapy is not very high. Patients, by the time we get to year five, you know, only a little over half are on AI. The others have stopped it for toxicity or other reasons.
And now there's a press release out there stating there's a phase three trial with adjuvant giredestrant that's positive. I guess we'll be seeing the data on that soon. It should be pretty interesting in terms of how people view that. The next papers are Rugo et al., capivasertib plus fulvestrin as first and second line endocrine-based therapy in PIK3CA, AKT1, P10 altered, hormone receptor positive, advanced breast cancer. Subgroup analysis from the phase 3 CAPItello-291 trial. ESMO 2025, abstract 526P. And Hurvitz et al., gedatolisib and fulvestrant plus or minus palbociclib versus fulvestrant in patients with hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative, PIK3CA wild type advanced breast cancer. First results from Victoria 1, ESMO 2025, abstract LBA 17. All right, so let's talk a little bit about PIK3 and AKT and mTOR inhibitors at ESMO. We had a follow-up of the CAPItello-291 study of capivasertib plus fulvestrant, but also another study looking at a different agent, gedatolisib plus fulvestrant plus palbo, the Victoria-1 study. So first, in terms of this follow-up of a CAPItello, anything you want to say about that and any issues about this study? And it looks like capivasertib, from what we can tell, and at least in the investigators, has replaced alpelisib in PIK3 patients. Any comments about the data from CAPItello-291?
So I think what we saw was more post-hoc analysis for patients who received this as first-line therapy and also those that never had chemotherapy. And, you know, the general theme was the same, that the capi arm did better than the fulvestrant placebo arm. And the CAPI, because of its intermittent scheduling, is more tolerable than alpelisib in terms of hypoglycemia and rash. So as you said, for most clinicians, it's kind of replaced alpelisib in the patients who would be candidates for a PI3 kinase AKT inhibitor. So to me, this is good data to see, but it doesn't change the current way that I use CAPI.
So Victoria 1. Intravenous PIK3 inhibition in this report and PIK3 wild-type metastatic disease.
Victoria 1 looked at gedatolisib, which is a PI3 kinase inhibitor. It's an IV PI3 kinase inhibitor. And the data that we saw at ESMO was the PIK3CA wild-type cohort. the trial had a doublet investigator arm or a triplet investigational arm. The triplet investigation arm was GADA plus fulvestrant plus palbo, and the doublet investigational arm was GADA plus fulvestrant, and the control arm was fulvestrant. Again, this is the data we saw was from the PIK3CA wild-type cohort, not the mutated cohort. And there was a remarkable improvement in PFS with the triplet. The PFS was 9.3 months with the triplet and 2 months with the control of fulvestrant monotherapy. The doublet had a PFS of 7.4 months compared to, again, 2 months with the fulvestrant monotherapy. So these were quite remarkable results that we saw. We're yet to see the PI3 kinase mutated arm results from this trial. Again, this is a PIK3CA inhibitor, so the known side effects that we would expect from this drug in terms of the rash and GI toxicity, hyperglycemia was not as profound as we've seen with the other drugs, but the total hyperglycemia rates under 15%. Stomatitis was one of the side effects that was seen with this that we haven't necessarily seen with the other PI3 kinase inhibitors. And majority of it was lower grade, but about 20% of patients had grade 3 or higher stomatitis. So to me, quite remarkable efficacy. The toxicities aren't mild. Over time, we'll have to learn how to manage those. And we're all looking forward to seeing the data from the PIK3CA mutated cohort from this trial. It's an IV drug compared to the oral, so that's one of the things that's unique about this compared to the other PI3 kinase AKT inhibitors. So we'll still have to learn a little bit more about this drug. Again, because it's an IV drug, I think the compliance and ability to give it would be much higher than the oral drugs, which we see a lot of issues with compliance, right? Especially the ones that cause toxicities. So perhaps some of it is the how we deliver the drug. It's an IV drug, you deliver it, so you get the efficacy because the drug is delivered.
So it's once a week, 3 out of 4 weeks?
Mm-hmm. So it's an intense regimen. Because then you have a one IV drug and one IM drug, right? The fulvestrant's IM. And then palbociclib is oral, 3-on, 1-off. So it's a complex regimen. We had the trial open, so it took a bit to figure out the schedule for the patients.